Hello and welcome once again to Crosslink Radio. This is Shirley Gutkowski, your host of the only radio show that talks about health from the eye teeth on down. That's what we're going to be talking about today. I was at a recent meeting of the Weston Price Foundation Madison chapter, and the conversation kind of was going all over the place. It was more of a roundtable kind of thing. And we started talking about vaccines. Stay tuned to hear what I had to say about the vaccines in the context of the Weston Price Foundation meeting in just a minute. Wondering how to improve your oral systemic practice? Join me, Shirley Gutkowski, in my guided mastermind. Each one-month mastermind tackles a single topic that's easy to implement because you and your colleagues plan it and implement it together. 1 month, one topic, affordable. Contact me by email at shirley@crosslinkradio.com for more information or to sign up. Hi, it's me, Shirley Gutkowski, and I am going to be talking today a little bit about vaccines, which is not a topic that I'm extremely well-versed in. I'm not going to be going into these deep, dark discussions about mercuries and combinations and the number of vaccines and all that. What I do want to share with you, though, is the science that tells us that we have better luck with some things by providing professional oral health care as opposed to vaccines. The conversation was at the Weston Price Foundation, kind of a roundtable meeting that I attended. I would like to give a shout out to meetup.com, or is it meetup.org, which is where I found this group. It was very, very interesting and exciting, actually. So here I am at this meeting, and one of the members was talking about a report, or was it a legislative something? Oh my gosh, my brain is just so fried today. Something about vaccines, and then, you know, the topic kind of shifted a little bit to the conspiracy side of vaccines for elderly, and people were wondering aloud whether those vaccines were higher in content of the virus or the bacteria, and whether or not they were designed to help make room at these care facilities when it's intended for sick and elderly people. I don't subscribe to that per se. I have to wonder, you know, if you don't keep it in the back of your head, you're just really just an ostrich, and that's not helpful to anybody. You have to know what all the sides are thinking. So I'm not 100% bought into that, but I'm not 100% saying, oh my God, that's just so ridiculous. It can't be true, yada, yada. So I just try to keep my mind open about that. But what it really comes down to for me, especially in the conversations that we have with oral care and long-term care, is that professional oral hygiene has been shown to be more effective than the flu vaccine and then the pneumonia vaccine. So I'm sitting here with this kind of, you know, bombshell news that providing a dental hygienist into the care facilities can reduce the amount of deaths by preventing respiratory infections and influenza. So I thought this would be a really good topic for Crosslink Radio, as it is, well, it's a little bit past or into flu season already, particularly in long-term care. The pneumonia vaccine is supposed to be extremely effective in patients who are 65 and over. A lot of people in healthcare get the flu vaccine, and they also often get a pneumonia vaccine, which is probably a good idea considering how many people we come in contact with. On the other side of that, the intention is to give these vaccines or provide vaccines for people who are at high risk. Just the mere fact that you're at high risk for these diseases makes it a little bit uncomfortable for me to be recommending these injections for these dependent adults. Oftentimes they are very ill, or they're just barely hanging on to being healthy, and this kind of treatment may or may not just kick them over the edges. So today I was doing some posting about it on Twitter and on Facebook. I want to make sure that people have something to share when they themselves are on Facebook or Twitter that kind of brings the other side to this. Dental hygienists, as you know, it's been my little song and dance here for the last couple of years, are undervalued. And when we are willing to inject people on a mass basis by materials that are on occasion recalled for having some kind of contamination, we have to really start to wonder what it is that we're doing, and is there a better way? And maybe it's an analog way, or maybe it's old-fashioned, or maybe it's so new that people just can't get their heads around it. But it's really time to start incorporating professional oral hygiene into the routine of these people in long-term care. A few months ago, earlier this year, I guess it was in the spring, I had Carol Roselle on, who was a High Life dental hygiene provider, who was working only with her one client, who was her mother-in-law, in a care facility. And the idea of the High Life protocol is to do professional oral hygiene once a week in residence, and throughout the rest of the week using xylitol products in the toothpaste for when on occasion the nursing assistants would actually find time to do oral care, and using xylitol mints or gum in the interim between these professional appointments. And her mother-in-law not only didn't have any urinary tract infections during the year that she was providing her this higher level of professional oral hygiene, she also had no respiratory infections during that amount of time. So, you know, sure, it's only one, but hygienists just do their thing and they go home and they start taking care of their family. They don't come home and think to themselves, you know, that happened to this one person. I remember this other person. And really, the 15 people that I'm taking care of, nobody had a respiratory infection. So maybe there's a link here. Maybe I should look into that. Maybe I should write a paper about it. Maybe. That absolutely doesn't happen. They do their job, they go home, and they take care of their family. They get up in the morning, they do their job, they come home and take care of their family in the morning. When I'm talking to dental hygiene in particular audiences, I do make a special effort to help these hygienists understand that if a patient does cancel, that they should be doing this kind of research or pondering these kinds of thoughts when they're on their own and when they have a moment to think through what their practice is. I don't know that that happens very much. The High Life dental hygienists, it's only a handful right now. So they're not gathering data. They are trying to build a clientele, and they're trying to get the word out that what they're doing is really valuable, but nobody is really taking the time to find the proof of how this stuff goes. So what has happened with respect to that is a couple of different things in PubMed. So the first one that I know of that kind of came in for me was a paper in the Journal of Dental, the International Journal of Dental Hygiene, or Dental Hygienists, International Journal of Dental Hygiene. And it was a paper that was published based on care facility and professional oral hygiene provided to the residents in this care facility, and the amount of decrease in pneumonia and respiratory infections in that cohort, in that group of patients or residents, over and above what the vaccine was. So here are the results of that study. If I want to just kind of quickly go over here, and two populations, one receiving professional oral health hygiene one knot, and they went directly to the bacteria. So in, let's see, over 6 months, in the professional oral hygiene group, the bacterial protein activities were decreased, and one of 98 patients was diagnosed with influenza, whereas in the non-professional oral hygiene group, nine of 92 patients were diagnosed with influenza. That arithmetic whittled down to a relative risk for developing influenza while under professional oral hygiene care was 0.1. So it was pretty low. They also found a very low rate of fever in that group. So, now we have this paper. This is from 2007, and there are others that also looked into this correlation between professional oral hygiene and respiratory. And you know that I'm not very big on meta-analyses, and I don't think that we have enough body of knowledge with the same variables to really compare different papers. I'm going to talk about this one anyway, because a lot of people do still think that these are the cat's hinders, the cat's pajamas. This one was done at the Nebraska Medical Center by Dr. Barnes, and she was, the title of the paper is Dental Hygiene Intervention to Prevent Nosocomial Pneumonias. And in conclusion, the dental hygienists have the expertise and practice experience to provide oral care in hospitals, long-term care, and residential facilities. They can contribute to solving oral care challenges through intercollaboration with other health care team members. Yet there are long-standing systemic barriers that must be addressed in order to provide this optimal care. Dental hygienists being better assimilated within the total health care team in hospital and residential facilities can positively impact the suffering, mortality, and morbidity associated with aspiration pneumonias. So that one was mostly on the aspiration pneumonia. There's also a paper here that was published in 2012 in Gerontology that kind of illustrates what the problem is from my perspective, that I've been honking this horn and standing all over this soapbox for a while, and that it is the idea that everybody should be involved in oral care, but nobody ever thinks to look at dental hygienists. And this was here from 2012, as I said, Gerontology. Healthcare professionals' perspectives on oral care for long-term care residents, nursing staff, speech-language pathologists, and dental hygienists. And the conclusion on this paper, well, let's go to the results. Daily oral health maintenance and monitoring was considered a role of nursing staff. Language pathologists and dental hygienists have roles focusing on advocacy, education, and supplemental care. Social factors motivate nursing staff to provide oral care, whereas factors related to general health consequences of poor oral health underline the motivations of speech-language pathologists and dental hygienists. Interesting twist, don't you think? And the conclusion is, education and training initiatives incorporating social aspects of oral health may be more effective for motivating nursing staff than approaches emphasizing physical risk factors. Organizations can foster environments that support collaboration and communication among the members of multidisciplinary teams in order to promote oral health as a priority. Why not just give dental hygienists a leg? Why not just include a dental hygienist in there, and the dental hygienist will just automatically take care of all of that? Most dental hygienists who want to be in that position are very effective as just a feature of their own intelligence, their own training, and their own motivation to get oral health done. They'll do it for nothing. That's how motivated and passionate they are. They quickly find that they can't do it for free, and then they burn out and fall off. That is the problem. I have not yet come across a paper that looked at that. So that's something that needs to be questioned and need to be looked at, as well as all of these other things here. So I wanted to make sure that I brought that part of it up also. Speech-language pathologists have a lot of trouble providing their therapies in long-term care because there's so much CRAP on these people's teeth and food that doesn't get cleared by the tongue. Because they're needing speech-language pathologists, something's not working with their orofacial complex or their oropharyngeal complex. So having a dental hygienist there can really make a difference and improve the outcomes, I don't think anybody's looking, of speech-language pathologists, because they don't have to fight around last night's dinner. I've seen how they work. They offer the residents different things to chew and or swallow and make recommendations and make assessments and treatment plans based on their ability to do so. So if they still have a lot of food in their mouth from the last meal or two or six meals ago, they're not getting a true assessment, in my opinion, and I would imagine that it would impede the progress of the therapies by not having clearances. So, you know, that's a little bit of a separate issue, but we need to have hygienists there. We can't just expect nurses to do that. Nurses have expertise in a far different area than what a dental hygienist does. They don't expect the nurses to wash these people's hair, and taking care of the oral cavity is a far more important part of overall health care than beauty parlor appointments. So it's really kind of crazy to me that this conversation hasn't made it past these arcane kind of discussions on oral hygiene and the health of people in long-term care. On that note, there are a couple of other studies. Here's one, Muted Dental Voices on Interprofessional Healthcare Teams, from the Journal of Dentistry 2011. I think I reported on this once before, starting to look a little familiar. This paper addresses three themes: oral health and frailty, interprofessional healthcare teams, and dental professionals on care teams. And the last sentence here of the abstract is that it is likely also that dental geriatrics will improve considerably when representatives from the dental profession are heard routinely by colleagues from other healthcare professions. So they are also calling out medical and asking them to consider the idea of having a dental professional on the care teams, that frailty is hastened by having poor oral hygiene and poor oral care. Now, poor oral care only comes from poor oral hygiene. So having a dental hygienist there on the forefront is a no-brainer. We have been teaching patients for decades that brushing and flossing prevents dental breakdown. There are nuances from the dental side that we all know and have to understand, but the upshot really is true that if you brush and floss or brush and clean between your teeth somehow, that you will be healthier and your teeth will be healthier. Without that, you're going to get cavities. Boom, big surprise. So having somebody in there to manage the oral biofilm is really, really the crux of this whole thing. So not having a dental hygienist in a care facility as an employed person there with the same responsibilities and the same pay scale as a nurse is time is over. We need to have somebody there taking care of the oral condition. We need to know more about how this thing is going to play out and why it's so important for dental hygienists to be there to get people to live and not die of some crazy reason like having dirty teeth. Now, Angie Stone has written a really important short work for people to get a really better understanding of the problem at hand. and that people shouldn't die of dirty teeth. That is the name of her book, Dying from Dirty Teeth, Angie Stone, traditional spelling. You can find it on Amazon. It was a number one seller in that category for a long time. And I think it's really crazy that it's not still on the number one list and that hygienists are just not talking about it. Maybe because it sounds a little bit over the top. I don't know. Angie recently was awarded CE level of certification by the Nurses Association in one of the Dakotas. I'm so sorry, I don't remember which one. And so she's making some strides in this area. What you can do as a consumer is to start asking for a dental hygienist to be at the facility, to be at the home, to be part of the care plan, to develop part of the care plan. Don't expect a nursing assistant to take up this oral care problem. They're not geared for it. They're not taught how to do it. They didn't sign up to do oral care. It is a horrible necessity that they would rather not do, and it is the most dangerous procedure that they do with respect to body care. Residents will spit at them. Residents will bite them. Residents will turn their face. They will clamp their teeth together. They don't want to have a non-professional working in their mouth. That hasn't been discussed either. So let's get some more of these papers written. Let's look at some of these problems from a different perspective. Do care people who live in a care facility, dependent adults, do they care who is doing their oral care? How do they perceive a CNA who has no training, has no confidence, who's afraid of being bitten? How do they perceive that person? Will they cooperate with somebody who's timid? I don't know. I don't think they will. So I think this is a real, real important piece of information here that needs to be addressed, or it needs to be looked at. Let's see if I can find another paper that looks at oral care as a comparison to influenza or pneumonia vaccines. Here is one from 2006, the Archives of Gerontology and Geriatrics. Whoa. the article's main author is Abe, and the title is Professional Oral Care Reduces Influenza Infection in Elderly. And they investigated the effects of oral care on influenza, evaluated in particular the activities of two proteases in saliva as they may contribute to an increased risk of infection with influenza. 198 elderly patients who visited daycare service facilities once a week were randomly assigned to either a professional oral care group or to an own oral care group as the control. Nine individuals in the control group and one person in the professional care group were diagnosed with influenza. The relative risk for developing influenza while under professional oral care was one. And the confidence ratio was 95%. So significant decreases in the number of those bacterial CFUs were found, and that the study suggests that maintenance of with oral care is effective in the prevention of influenza in the elderly. So we have another way of doing this, and we have a cheaper way of doing it, and we have a way that supports whole health by activating another care professional into the mix. There's a lot more going on in the mouth than I can talk about in a little tiny, 30-minute presentation here, or discussion, or one-sided rant, or whatever you want to call it. But, it's the same kind of thing over and over again. We're looking for easier and easier answers. The easiest answer is to have a dental hygienist on board. Not the easiest answer is a vaccine. Vaccines have their own problems. I think I don't know of a person that had an influenza vaccine that didn't get sick from it. I would like to see those people post more often, so maybe we would have a better handle on how this whole thing operates. But it seems to me that the flu is not good for dependent adults. The flu vaccine is not necessarily the answer when a dental hygienist could be employed to take care of the oral condition in those residents, improve the influenza numbers, improve the pneumonia numbers, improve the glycemic index numbers, not glycemic index, but the glucose management, improve just about everything in the lives of these people who are dependent on someone else for almost every aspect of daily living. If they need help with eating, if they need help with dressing, they need help with brushing their teeth. It's not a cosmetic issue. If they have all of their teeth, they work their butts off to keep all of their teeth all their life, and to have them lose 60% of their teeth, as reported by Angie Stone in her observational studies and people in care facilities in the first year or two living in a care facility, it's just not right. It's just not right. So let's get hygienists in the mix and get them out there and to work in a care facility. Ask your local facility if they have a dental hygienist on board. They'll say, well, we don't have a hygienist, but we have a dentist. And then ask specifically again, do you have a dental hygienist and why not? And encourage them to find a way to get a hygienist in there to help reduce the problems that these people have with bacterial infections, reduce the reduce inflammation, reduce fever days, reduce flu, reduce pneumonia, reduce just about everything you'd want to, and improve everything you'd want to. So we're ending a couple of minutes short here. I'd like to invite you, if you are a practitioner, to my mastermind group. And we will be exploring these kinds of issues and making them make sense in a dental hygiene practice as part of a dental practice. By coming together with others of like mind, you will have an opportunity to develop your own practice within a practice that makes the most sense for the practice that you have at hand and the kind of a doctor that you're working with. I don't know of a dentist who would be offended by this kind of mastermind group, because in the end, they are the ones who are going to reap the financial benefits and the patients will reap the health benefits. And by having those two in balance, the patient health and the practice health, the dental hygienist practitioner will also be healthier and have a much nicer time at work and not be frazzled all the time by overworking, by just working on bare numbers. Have a great rest of the day. Make sure to share these episodes with friends of yours. This is Shirley Kutkowski at CrossLink Radio signing off for today, and we'll talk to you next time.